Welcome to another edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast on Cycle. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. And we just had a new rule come down with the Board of Governors. They are trying to limit the off-the-ball fouls, basically to force bad free throw shooters to the free throw line, create a turnover at the free throw line. Feeling is it slowed the game down. Fans don't like it. So now the technical rule is for the last 2 minutes of every quarter, it's a free throw in possession of the ball if you foul off the ball. I hate this trying to work the rules of the game because we want it to be more entertaining. And in my mind, protecting weaknesses that have been exposed in players. You and I have talked a little bit about this, not on the podcast, but just in person. And I get the sense that you're with the idea of tweaking these rules. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I look at these rules and I say the same thing every year. These board of governors, they go there, they talk, and then they come in, they announce all this stuff.
Right.
Isn't it great? Yeah, they give you the rules, they explain to you the rules, and I say the same question every year.
Yeah.
What did we do
yeah.
to improve the game?
Well, what do you mean by improve the game?
What
their answer
do?
Will be, well, we're making it more entertaining.
Okay.
Our fans don't like that it's slowed down.
Say that again. They're making it more
entertaining.
Okay. What did we do to improve the games, the fundamental game of basketball?
How do you do that through the rules?
Okay. How do you do that through the rules? The game is played. It's a physical game.
Right.
Why are we taking away the physicality of the game?
I don't know that we're taking away the physicality of the game. Their argument would be this is not what fouls were meant to do, to foul off the ball in order to put a bad free throw shooter on, that you're gaming the system, and this isn't what basketball is all about. That's the argument. Look, I don't like it. To me, it's the same as saying you don't dribble well with your left hand. You know what? We can't pressure you because the turnovers make the game ugly, or you can't pass the ball when you're pressured that way. I mean, put people on the floor that can make free throws, and then you can't use that strategy. Why don't we do that?
I mean, these are all great arguments. I don't buy into any of this. Every year, they're tweaking, right? You can't foul this guy. So after six fouls, guy now suddenly gets automatic two free throws. Like, what playground does that happen?
Are you talking about summer league or?
I'm talking about the game of basketball is played in the playgrounds. That's where the game is played. Therefore, what can we do to improve that? When you go to the summer league, you go, ooh, ah. When you watch a great player, you go, ooh, ah.
Okay.
If he's phenomenal, he takes your breath away.
Right.
Okay. What are we doing to improve that so that we can get the great players and the game that all of these people have played? Whether you played it in the suburbs, whether you played it in the rec league, what are you doing to improve the game of basketball that you can allow the game itself to take precedent over any individual guy? Because in the end, the fundamentals of the game are the only thing that we're stressing.
Right.
Okay? So...
But shooting is a fundamental part of the game, right? We're not stressing that.
Shooting is a skill, is the most important skill set you can have playing the game of basketball.
Okay.
Fundamentals of the game are the only thing that we're teaching. All of these other things that we're doing are just things that are taken away from the essence of the game of basketball. The essence of the game are the fundamentals of the game. What is every team doing? They're defending. They're securing the rebound after you have a good defensive sequence.
Yeah.
And you're sharing the ball with one another. And if you're not doing the fundamentals of the game,
yes,
you're taken away from the essence of the game with distractions. Guys shooting a one-legged fadeaway. A guy doing no-look passes and all those things. Okay, they're great. But you use that when you need it.
Right.
See, people didn't understand that Magic Johnson was fundamentally as sound as any player that came through here.
Right.
But the only thing that you see on these networks...
Well, you see the highlights.
You see the highlights.
Right.
Michael Jordan's footwork was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
His fundamentals were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But all you saw was the tongue out. And flying through the air.
Right.
And I believe I can fly
you know
videos.
Yeah.
Which if you watch his 40 points that he scored, 38 of them was just pure fundamental footwork.
Right. It's funny that you say that because we've had the retirement of Tim Duncan. And the one shot that I see on the highlights over and over again is the one that he hit against the Lakers.
Yeah.
Where he's running across, like it's a three-pointer, like a desperation shot that he hits and falls down. That was so not a part of his game. That was the exception to everything that made Tim Duncan great. And you know why? Because it's the one highlight that fits the highlights that you like to put out there, because his highlights were not highlights of the standard variety.
The guy had the greatest nickname.
Big Fundamental.
Big Fundamental.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's why he didn't get the acclaim that he got, or you never saw him on SportsCenter.
But the basketball purist saw him.
Yeah.
The NBA saw him. His peers saw him.
So why do we not, because if I'm reading you correctly, why are the basketball purists not making the decisions about the game?
That is an unbelievable question that I've been asking for years. You're absolutely right. That's my question. Why aren't those guys making the decisions?
Yeah.
Why? And I don't know. So every year when they come out of this meeting,
right,
I ask the same question. Where are the guys who live for this?
Yes.
Where are, you know, when I came in the league in the 80s, there was just basketball people who were, I just call them lifers, like Hubie Brown, Chuck Daly's,
Rod Thorne,
Phil Jackson's, and Jerry West. It goes on. It's Lenny Wilkins. They were lifers.
Right.
Okay. When I went to the gym today and you see Tim Gergerich, that guy's just a lifer.
Right, right.
Okay.
Right.
There wasn't a coaching scheme. The guy's a lifer. If you could just wanted to dribble a ball, the guy would stop. He stopped eating dinner to teach a kid.
Right.
Yep. If you ever talk to Hubie Brown, the guy will just stop doing what he's doing to talk basketball with you.
Yep. I know.
Okay. But why aren't those guys?
Yeah. My theory is because this has become more of a business, and you have businessmen trying to appeal to the greatest mainstream audience that they possibly can, which is an audience that doesn't appreciate the game, that it just wants to be entertained. And I'm like, if you want to be entertained, then let's not have free throws. Let's not have timeouts. If it's all about just going up and down, let's just go up and down if that's what you consider basketball.
I think that's enough said. I think we know what it is. Now.
But see, here's the problem. I got to know Kiki Vandeweghe through the Pete Newell big man camp.
Right.
Kiki was a disciple of Pete Newell. Pete Newell was a lifer.
Lifer of fundamentals.
Yes, yes. And Kiki was his first pupil. He was a disciple, right? So now Kiki is in charge of basketball operations, and Kiki's the one coming out saying, yeah, you know what? I think this is going to be good for the game. It troubles me to no end. Because they've converted. I don't know if they've converted him. I don't know that he's gone to the dark side. But when you take a guy like Kiki and he becomes the guy who's saying, no, this is going to be good for the game, I'm thinking, Kiki, where did you go?
You know, look.
I know. You're not going to kill Kiki. I'm not killing Kiki, too. He's still my friend. I like him. But gone to the dark side.
Kiki was an incredible player because his fundamental base.
Yes.
He was fundamentally sound. I mean, he was just.
There's no way that Kiki in his heart of hearts believes that protecting bad free throw shooters is the way that this league. Just imagine Kiki going to Pete Newell and telling him what he's been party to. What would Pete Newell right now is rolling over in his grave knowing that Kiki was a part of this.
Well, look, the thing is, when they do come up with these rules, the game itself has to be preserved because that's the essence of what this is all about. The essence of the game is fundamentals. And the further we get away from that, the more watered down it gets.
Right.
The more watered down it gets, we have an inferior product. Okay? So if we're talking business, what got us here?
And eventually we'll get to a point where we lose our way. I agree with that.
Now,
I agree.
The one thing that the players are beginning to learn and that I'm seeing that's coming back with these younger players is you're beginning to see them have a fundamental base younger because they're not going to get that 4 years of college like we did.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see the fundamentals being emphasized younger than, you know, what it was like, say, 20, 25 years ago, which I am willing to bet that you're going to see players, the game is going to revert back to what it was.
Well, and to that end, I feel, you know, in spite of some of the rule implementation, and that the game is moving in the direction of two-way players. Like more two-way players
than ever before. And the reason is, but this is my thought on why it's, because young people today don't watch the highlights as much as the players did in the 90s.
Okay.
Okay, so while those guys were watching Jordan in the 90s, mm-hmm. it spurned off Vince Carter mm-hmm. and Kobe Bryant mm-hmm. and Grant Hill mm-hmm. and all those guys. Today's youth don't watch television.
Right.
They're Snapchatting,
yep.
tweeting, and yep. FaceTiming and all those things. So now they aren't watching television because things are moving boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Because of that, the game is, you're seeing the game shift a little bit.
I wonder, because, and I just experienced this with my kids. You know what they're watching more? Well, first of all, they're watching YouTube. They're watching right. videos, right? Which you can get highlights there,
right.
but you're also getting, you're getting how-tos.
There you go.
I'm seeing a lot of there, that. Like
I watch my kids. They want to learn how to play an instrument. They'll yeah. go right to YouTube and figure out
yeah.
how to do this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I wanted to learn how to tie a tie, I asked my dad or somebody.
Right.
Now, oh, Dad, I know how to tie this. Where'd you learn that? I just went to YouTube.
Right.
So now I'm seeing today's younger generation.
Yes.
Man, their fundamentals. And I think the game is going to evolve. Like, when I watch Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Okay, he does all the fancy stuff and all of that. But his fundamental base.
Yeah.
Unreal.
And kids are looking at the drills and stuff that he's doing.
Oh, man.
And they're replicating.
Oh,
that's what they're interested in.
You know.
It's fair. Here's the one question I have, though, when it comes to NBA teams is, and I've seen this in being at the Las Vegas Summer League, you're bombarded. I'm sure you as an agent, and even when you were an executive with the Bulls, you were bombarded by people who had a new idea or had a new thing that they wanted to introduce. And a lot of them are, you can kind of tell pretty quickly, this is just, I'm trying to get on the NBA gravy train. But there's also people who have ideas that could actually have some value. And there seems to me to be a real reluctance to try new ideas. As often as the NBA is perceived as being progressive, I get that there's a real reluctance at times, both with agents and with teams, to talk to players about trying new things. Now, why is that?
Well, this is a herd mentality up here.
In the NBA?
In the NBA. I've never seen more three-point shooting
yeah.
in the summer than – and this is unbelievable. I mean, everyone's shooting a three, and it's encouraged.
Yeah.
No, the reason that you're open is because you can't shoot. Okay? Everyone can't shoot like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Reggie Miller and Ray Allen and all those guys.
Right.
But now, the code word for the NBA now is we're trying to improve our shooting. Now, I don't know what that means, but it's a code. We're trying to increase our shooting, which increases our spacing, and now, okay.
Right.
Now, again, the fundamentals are always going to remain in place. The really good teams aren't improving their shooting. The really good teams are improving their defense because you got to defend and rebound and pass the ball before you can shoot.
Right.
What does that mean? Well, everyone else is looking at the offense and improving their offense and their spacing and their shooting and three-point percentages. The great teams and the good teams in this league are all figuring out how to defend that.
Hmm.
The biggest change I've seen over the last 3 to 5 years is that you cannot get into rotation and be a good team in today's NBA. So you would double team, you would rotate out of
right,
the double
right,
team.
Right, right, right.
And then
so now everybody's switching everything.
Now you have to switch.
Right.
Which eliminates the shooting. When I hear people talk about shooting, code, you're a bad team.
Okay.
Code,
yeah.
bad team.
Yeah.
Because I know when you go see the Golden State Warriors, there will be no rotation.
Right.
Imagine playing a game
yeah.
in the 80s or the 90s where there was no rotation.
Yeah.
Everybody rotated.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever seen the Warriors double team?
Yeah.
Think about that. Think about that.
Yeah.
The Spurs. Who they double team?
Mm-hmm.
The good teams today
right.
have to play where they can guard.
And But to be clear, because people don't understand what double team means. I see people all the time talking about, that guy's being double teamed. I'm like, no, they're not. There's a guy hedging. Mm-hmm. You're going to close the space.
Right.
But a double team is you send a second defender, and now everybody has to rotate away from the farthest guy on the floor.
You can't do that today.
That doesn't happen in a lot of cases.
Today, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Screen roll, switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now all the good teams are sitting around figuring out players where you don't have to compromise your defense at all, because defense is the only thing that you can do consistently for 82 nights a year.
Right.
I can't always shoot well.
Right.
Some nights you just don't have it.
Right.
Some nights your ball falls, some nights it don't. But defensively,
you can always have that.
You can have that. And all of the teams right now that are actually trying to win, because that's the only thing we're trying to do here, are figuring out how to build a defense and rebound that ball so that it gives yourself a chance. If you don't score, Rick, and I don't score, the score is still 0-0.
How many teams do you think are realistically trying to win?
Well, you can count it. You can just look at it and see. Now you have the Warriors.
Yeah.
You have the
San Antonio.
You got Cleveland.
Okay.
The Knicks.
Okay. Clippers?
I think the Clippers are in that window where they are trying to capitalize on the talent that they've assembled.
Okay.
Okay? I think they have three guys that they feel are ready to win right now.
What about Boston?
I think Boston is in the developing stage of trying to figure out who they are and what they are.
Okay. So they're not trying to win.
It's not that they're not trying to win. It's that
they're not just trying to win right now.
When I say trying to win, meaning do you actually have an opportunity to does your talent equate to you got to have top 10 players in this league?
I get that. But this is my problem when we look at a team like Boston, because Boston had all those assets. They had all those draft picks. They have a nice regular season team. But if you're not trying to translate those picks into a top 10 talent, if you can say get a Carmelo Anthony.
But it's very hard to do, Rick. Okay. Give Danny this, okay? Danny understands, I think, as well as anyone in the league, what it takes to win. He won as a player.
Okay.
Okay.
And he won as a GM. He put together the big three.
Danny understands what it takes. He needs X, Y, and Z to get that guy. Because when you get that guy, it doesn't ensure that you're going to win. It just gives you a chance.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I don't think any of us could have said 2 years ago that we thought the Boston Celtics were going to make the playoffs 2 years ago. I didn't see anyone raising their hand going, the Celtics were one of the top eight teams in the East. Now, I think the Celtics outperformed to what people...
Their abilities.
Not their abilities, what with the expectation that we put on them.
Oh, that's fair. Okay. They've come along faster than most people expected.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So Danny is going through the process. The process involves how do you get better? You can do it in a draft. You can do it in a trade.
Okay.
You can do it in free agency. Or your young players have to improve from within. There's only four ways to get better.
Right.
And Danny clearly was trying to get better in a draft. Danny has tried to get better in trades. Danny has tried to get better in free agency. And Danny has put together a staff of young people by his coaching staff and the coach that he hired to say, you know what, I got to get a guy who understands young people so I can improve from within. You can't fault a man for trying.
All right.
Now,
I'll give you that.
Whether or not it resulted in him getting a championship team, hey, you can't fault the man for trying.
Okay.
There's only so many of those top 10 players to go around. Now, no one could have said this 3 years ago that they thought that Draymond Green was going to develop into a top 10 player.
Right.
So however you get it, whether it's in a draft or a trade, or you get it, you nurture it, and then you capitalize on it. Until Danny actually gets that guy, I'm going to sit here and say, you know what? He's trying. Just like all the other 30 teams are. It's only so many of them that actually say, we're ready to do it.
Hmm.
We're ready. That's a little different. You can sit here and say, when I say you're trying to win, no, you got a guy who's ready to do it. The Knicks right now, they got it. They're ready.
Hmm.
The Warriors, they're ready. The Spurs, look at their age. They're ready.
Now, a lot of people would question you putting the Knicks in that category already.
The Knicks are here because of the age of Carmelo Derrick Rose and the players, Joakim Noah, there is no 3-4 years now.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. There is no.
So they're going for it now. That's what you mean.
They have a window, right. just like the Clippers.
Right.
The Clippers now have a window.
Right.
The Clippers' window is now. Whether they want to say it or the Clippers' window is right now.
Because you look at Blake, you look at DeAndre, and you look at Chris. Those guys are relatively.
Those minutes are adding up. Okay. They got minutes. They got minutes on that body. Okay. So now every moment that you play in the NBA, you have to cherish because it's so hard to win in this league.
Yeah.
And when you have an opportunity to win, you got to win now. You can't say, well, we'll do it next year. You got to win and you got to win now. So when you have an opportunity to win in this league, you got to do it now.
Okay. So that is my argument against Boston because they had all these draft picks before they're selected. That's when they have their greatest value. They had a good team, but they didn't have a closer. And I look at the Eastern Conference was wide open this past year. Why not go? I mean, attempt
to go out.
Who are
you going
to
get?
Supposedly Melo was available. Could you get him?
Melo has a no trade clause on his contract. How are you?
Okay, so he wasn't willing to go. But if it got to that point.
Okay, so. Well, how are you going to get these guys? Who are you going to get? Okay, that sounds good. It sounds good on the podcast. Who are you going to get? Okay, sounds good.
So you're saying he couldn't have gotten Carmelo Anthony?
I'm just saying this. It sounds good.
Yeah.
Who are you going to get?
Okay.
Who's right. out there?
I don't have proof positive that there was somebody.
Yeah.
Was under the assumption that they could have gotten Melo because that was the.
Okay. Yeah.
The rumor.
Well, Carmelo has a no trade clause in his contract.
Right. That was my only thing was the at least from what I was hearing was hey no we're good we're ahead of schedule and I'm thinking no you have a good team but you're missing a piece if you can go get that piece now go okay. compete for that title now.
Who is this guy? Just tell me who this guy is.
I would have gone and tried to get Carmelo. Now okay. you're saying Carmelo wouldn't have gone. That's a different.
Okay, so you got to give up something
story.
To get Melo. So all these things that got you there, you're not going.
Well, again. Look, I'm going under the supposition that at that time, this was before Derek comes in. This is before Joakim. This is the Knicks are looking to rebuild, and at least the noise was that Phil and Carmelo weren't connected. That Phil was ready to turn the page. Look, if you're going to turn the page, go get those draft picks that Boston is offering. Go get one of their young talents.
But again,
and turn the page.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds great.
Well, yeah. What? So why not do that?
I tell you why. First, let's evaluate the draft.
Okay.
Okay. Just because you're a number one or number two or number three pick, what does that mean?
Right.
What does that mean? Like, maybe their scouts don't like the players in this draft.
Okay.
So maybe those assets weren't as valuable.
Okay.
I don't know. But what I'm saying is there aren't enough top 10 players to go around.
Right.
Because if there were, everyone would be, like, competing.
Right.
There aren't enough Tim Duncans to go around, or Kobe Bryant's, or
right.
LeBron James, or Kevin Durant's, or Derrick Rose. There aren't enough of them to go around. So when you get one, you got to maximize it right then and there. Okay?
Right.
And when the guy is in his window, he is in his sweet spot.
Yeah.
You got to close the deal.
Right.
And when he is there, when I say he's there, he's able to play at the highest level in the biggest moments. Some players can do it maybe they'll have a 3 or 5 year window.
Right.
Okay. Hakeem Olajuwon had a 2 or 3 year run like nothing I've ever seen.
Hmm.
Jordan was able to extend his for a 6 or 8 year window.
Right.
Okay. But it took him 8 years to get there, though.
Right.
Okay. Then you may have a Tim Duncan who basically for like 19 years, he competed for a championship. Think about that.
Yeah.
I don't know this. The guy's probably won more games ever in the history for that length of time than anybody. I can't remember him not winning 50 games.
Yes. I think they had one season. The only season was the lockout year.
Okay, yeah.
Because
they didn't play 50 games.
They played 50 games. Right.
Okay. So, you know, Kobe Bryant had a window.
Right.
He had a window with Shaq, and then he had another window when
Pau
Gasol and those guys.
Lamar.
But he had a window.
Yeah.
Every great player has a window when they're ready. And when they're ready, you gotta do it. Now, there's only so many times, it happens, you know, maybe a guy was a number one guy and he's not willing to accept being the number two guy.
Yeah. Happens.
That happens.
Yeah.
Maybe the guy is the number one guy and he goes to the number three guy. And he's like, all right, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So everything's got to come together for you mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, and you got to accept where you are in your career.
Hmm.
So when you see this, you got to go with it. You know, LeBron James has had a window where, and I don't know how many finals he's been to now.
Six in a row.
Okay. Where the guy is, he's in his window.
Yeah. An unbelievable window.
He's got a run going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. He's got a run going right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you explain, by the way, and we'll kind of wrap on this. How do you explain in the modern era a guy who goes to six consecutive finals? I mean, as great as Michael was, Michael went to three, took a break, came back, went to another three. But even he, for what, you know, I mean, you can look at it a multitude of ways, never went to that many consecutively. And he looked like he was worn out after the three consecutive the first time the second time.
The thing about LeBron that has been interesting to watch is how the game has evolved. You know, Golden State now gets a lot of credit for playing small ball and what they've been able to do with the three-point shot. The first time I really saw small ball was when LeBron went to
Miami. Yeah.
That's when the first time
they played him in the four. Yeah.
That was the first time I said to myself, and I remember watching, it was the Bulls series. The Bulls, I think, won either the first game or the first two games of that series.
Yeah.
And Miami eventually won the series. But that was the first time I said, Chris Bosh at the five is a problem that I couldn't solve.
Yes. And he was playing like a stretch five.
He wasn't on the block. And it was the first time, and I have so much respect for Tom Thibodeau because the guy is just a defensive guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, he always makes adjustments and he does a great job defensively. But that was the first time I saw small ball and there wasn't anything I could do. And I always had counters in my mind. Oh, I would probably do something different, or I see maybe there was a mistake made. Chris Bosh at the five was the first time I said, oh, that's a problem, because now I can get a good shot in the last 4 minutes of every game, and there's nothing I can do. Now, if you get an uncontested shot in the last 4 minutes of a conference final game or a finals game,
yeah,
that's an unbelievable shot.
Yeah, for sure.
Chris Bosh was the first time that made me realize that this is something that's going to be a problem.
Hmm.
And LeBron James was at the start of this wave.
Yeah.
Wasn't his athletic ability that impressed me, which he is an incredible athlete. But him at the four is a problem, because now it stretches the floor and allows your four man to be a distributor, a la Draymond Green. So when I saw Chris Bosh was the one I saw them able to, they had Battier, and they were able to do all this switching on the floor.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Defensively, they could switch
everything. And I said, that's going to be a problem, because I had never seen that before.
Yeah.
Where the five, that was a good shot for him.
Yeah.
That was a good shot for Chris Bosh. And he consistently made that shot. And there was nothing you could do, because where were you rotating from? So when I saw that, I said, that's going to be a problem once everyone else figures it out. And now the Warriors have taken it to a whole nother level.
And didn't San Antonio too? I mean, essentially?
San Antonio, but Tim Duncan could never shoot it.
No. But they would play a Boris Diaw. They moved Duncan to the five. Problem.
Right.
And they would have Boris Diaw, and then they had Kawhi Leonard. So
Tim Duncan was the first four man that I've seen in the modern era that could move the ball from one side of the floor to the other. So you could never get them out of their offense.
You mean in terms of being able to pass the ball from one side to the other?
So you turn up the game, right? So Rick Bucher now is going to turn up his defense.
Right.
I can just throw it to Tim Duncan, and he'll switch it to the other side.
Right.
How do you turn up the defense on what five man can pressure Tim Duncan?
You're talking about working from the high post.
I'm talking about working. So if you dribble the ball up the floor, you pressure Tony Parker, and you're going to turn up the pressure, and you're going to do all these things defensively. Okay, I can lock in on you and focus and push you one way.
Right.
I can just throw the ball to Tim Duncan, and he'll just reverse it to the other side. So your defense is always at a disadvantage, because – who's going to pressure Tim Duncan?
And they had a multitude of players who could do that. Because Boris could do the same thing. Yeah.
Manu was on the side. Now they start backdooring you. Now you're afraid to get up in the passing lanes. So they could always handle pressure.
Yeah.
The The key is always handling pressure.
Right.
You can't pressure the Spurs because Tim Duncan is just too skilled. They'll just pick you apart. Tim goes to the four, Tim goes to the five. At the five, what is Shaq going to do? Start pressuring Tim Duncan? No.
Right.
That's why he was always a problem for the Lakers.
Right.
Because they could always run their offense. Therefore, the only way you could beat them is that they just missed the open shot. But they knew they were always going to get a shot. Now, most teams don't have that luxury. So that's what made him, to me, was incredible, is that he could always move the ball from one side of the floor to the other. So Popovich never had to worry about what we're going to run at the end of the game. Because it didn't matter. We'll just give it to Timmy.
And whatever we get is what we get. Right. Okay. We're going to get something good.
Timmy could go back door. Timmy could make the elbow shot. Timmy could play one-on-one from there. Timmy could play screen roll from there. You pick your poison because we're going to get a shot. Now, if we miss the shot, Popovich, as he does, he walks off the floor. He waves and says, hey, we either won it or we lost it. And that's what made Tim Duncan great.
Right.
Most people don't have that luxury. But when I saw the Miami Heat, that's when I said the game is going to change.
Right.
And that's when I first recognized it, and now you see it now. And when you saw the finals this year, you basically saw LeBron versus Draymond Green.
So it's probably when we saw them against Oklahoma City, because they lost to Dallas.
Yep.
And Dallas actually went small in a way, because they took Deshaun Stevenson out. They were playing Jason Terry. They played J.J. Barea. Mm-hmm. Everybody was like, what are they doing? They were speeding up the game.
This is what I look for. I look for things like this.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, when you see something, and then how do you defend it?
Yeah.
If you can't figure out how to defend something, you're in trouble. You're a major problem. And right now, you know, the best teams now, is how do you defend them? How do you defend the Spurs? You can't. You cannot stop Tim Duncan from swinging the ball.
Well, you couldn't stop Tim Duncan. And that ultimately is what we're going to miss, what the Spurs are going to miss, and what we're going to miss with Tim Duncan retiring.
Yes.
And that is your basketball primer from BJ Armstrong on the evolution of champions and the power forward position. Here on the BJ and Bucher podcast on the Cycle Network. We'll do it again real soon. Thanks a lot, BJ.
Thank you.